Broken in the Dust again. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Eurofolk Radio. We are live. This is Yahweh's Covenant People. And we have a special treat for all you Mandan out there. We're going to be reviewing an article quite rare for mainstream, academics to discuss a subject like this. The title of, and I put the link in the chat room already, The Welsh, the Vikings, and the Lost Tribes of Israel on the Northern Plains, The Legend of the White Mandan. Now, before even getting into this article, who were the two guys that Jefferson sent out? Lewis and Clark. Mm-hmm. Lewis and Clark, among other things, reported that they encountered giants while on their excursion, and they encountered several white Indian tribes, among them being the Mandan, and I think Pocahontas was actually a white woman, not an Indian. Okay? All right? So there were, in fact, white tribes that had been mistaken for, Amerindians, when they're in fact of Israelite origin, okay? And that's the story we're going to do today.
Probably from a lot of the tribe of Dan that came over here in the reed boats.
Right.
That's where a lot of the Hebrew inscriptions on a lot of the rocks and in the caves and stuff came from. The archaeological history that they have suppressed about Israelites in North America.
Yeah,
like everything else they cover up.
Yeah, yeah. The Ten Commandments stone in New Mexico, just south of Albuquerque. Okay. In Hebrew, inscribed in Paleo-Hebrew. Mm-hmm. People didn't even know about Paleo-Hebrew until the 20th century. So mm-hmm. it can't be fake. Right? It's in Paleo-Hebrew. Right? So there's all kinds of evidence that our people were here millennia ago. Millennia. 4,000 years millennia we're talking about.
Well, a lot of our people, they came up the Mississippi River.
Yes. Yeah.
Georgia Guidestones, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Oh.
That's what Brother A. Bear has got in the chat room.
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of... along the
and
Eastern
hello
seaboard.
To all our brethren in the, in the chat. There's the chat room's pretty well full. Yeah. They're not all posting, but there's a big, large number.
Right.
And
so,
we're glad the program is popular.
Yeah,
we thank
very
you
good.
For your listening.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so this is from the South Dakota State Historical Society, one of their regular publications. Again, the title of the article is The Welsh, the Vikings, and the Lost Tribes of Israel on the Northern Plains, The Legend of the White Mandan by James D. McLaird. Okay? Not your typical scholarly subject. Not at all. But that's what this has been published in the state of, what did I just read? North Dakota? Or I'm thinking Idaho for some reason. North Dakota. Okay? I'm sorry, South Dakota. Get it right. Get it right, Eli. Okay. And he states, from the earliest European discoveries, rumors of white Indians have circulated in America. Always to the west of settled areas, there were supposed to be the people who possessed advanced customs and technology, unlike the uncivilized savages the frontiersmen had already met and fought. Now, of course, we know also, Pastor Steve, that there were many white tribes in the east, okay, Cherokee being one.
Well, those of the Iroquois Confederacy, of which the original Cherokees were part, the Cherokees now are all race mixed, pretty much.
Yes. Yeah, it's rare. Although you still run into a lot of blue-eyed blonde Cherokees.
Yeah.
For the most part, they have, there's not many pure Israelites among them anymore.
Okay. Doesn't Visser claim to be a Cherokee?
Right.
Except he's got a great big Jewish nose.
Geronimo. We call him Geronimo.
Okay. Geronimo, yes.
All right. Sometimes these claims were buttressed by eyewitness accounts of meetings with bearded, light-skinned Indians, some of whom possessed Bibles even before Lewis and Clark got there. Very interesting. Okay. But probably, I'm sure they didn't possess Bibles before Lewis and Clark got there, but they took to the Bible for some reason. While such curious tales plainly fascinated settlers, political significance was often attached to them as well. And I have to scroll down here. This site is difficult to navigate.
Right, this is from South Dakota History, page 246.
Right, right. Richard Hakluyt, promoters of English colonization, who wrote extensively in the late 16th century, claimed that a medieval Welsh adventurer named Madoc had sailed west with colonists and had perhaps settled in America. If his descendants could be found, England would have a right of discovery. Wales and England weren't always part of the same country, okay?
No.
The Welsh would be. Okay, but he continuing with the author. England would have a right of discovery prior to that of Spain and could claim America as its own. Whether from simple curiosity or political desire, the stories of such white Indians. White Indians persisted, even though they were regularly proved incorrect when contact was made with a tribe rumored to have been of non-Indian ancestry. Well, I mean, not always. Because there were a lot of other tribes that had white skin and didn't have the same customs as the other Indians. Always, just to the west, there was another tribe, and word had it that among them were to be found the fabled white Indians. You want to take the next paragraph, Steve?
Sure. As the western horizon moved to the Great Plains region in the 1700s, the legend of white Indians persisted. The Assiniboine in Canada had given Pierre Gaultier de Varennes de la Vérendrye information about white Indians living to the west, and one of the purposes for his expedition to the Northern Plains in 1738 was to learn more about these strange people known as the Mandan. With great anticipation and curiosity, he finally reached their villages. Ever since, proponents of the non-Indian origins of the Mandans have utilized the French explorers' startling observations about these people and their villages. The Vérendrye described the village he visited as a fort built on a height in open prairie, with a ditch more than 15 feet deep and 15 to 18 feet wide, which could be entered only by use of steps or timbers, which are removed when there is danger from the enemy, making it impregnable against Indians.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. He concluded that their fortifications were not at all Indian-like. About the people, he remarked, this nation is of mixed blood, white and black.
He must mean Indian. White and Indian.
With fairly good-looking women, especially the light-complexioned ones. Many of them have blonde or fair hair, he added. Most of the women do not have Indian features.
Okay.
He discovered that their earth lodges were large and spacious, and nothing is left lying about. The Mandan villages, he learned, were a trading center for the region, and the Mandan were astute diplomats and traders. In evidence of their cleverness, La Vérendrye related their treatment of the numerous Assiniboine who had accompanied him on the journey, intending to remain at the Mandan villages to feast upon Mandan corn for an extended period. The Mandan greeted the Assiniboine with open arms, informing them that they were welcome because a large Sioux war party was expected to attack soon and additional warriors would be valuable. Sioux is an English name given to the Dakotas. Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota were the three branches of the Kodas. Sioux was something which means enemy. It's a French word, and it was applied to that tribe. There were three branches of that tribe. So let's get that corrected. That's the Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota.
Okay.
Okay. The Assiniboine hurriedly departed, not wanting any part
in the war against the Sioux.
In a war against the Sioux. The Mandan, wishing to rid themselves of unwelcome guests, had used this diplomatic ploy to encourage the Assiniboine to leave.
Hey, stick around and meet my mother-in-law.
Yeah, right. Although he had not found the Pacific Ocean and the Spaniards as he had hoped, La Vérendrye had discovered white Indians, giving new life to the rumor that had circulated since the discovery of the continent, providing later writers with evidence to fuel the popular legend of the white Mandan. Oh, yeah.
Mandan, right. Okay, so we know from scripture that in Hebrew, the Hebrew word for man, often translated man, is Adam, which means to show blood in the face, i.e. white people. Okay?
White.
And in the New Testament, it is anthropos. So we have the same expression, son of man, in the Old Testament with Adam always being the noun for man. And in the New Testament, it's always anthropos. So it
now,
means...
Now, could these be men of Dan?
Could be. Hey, don't be logical, Pastor Steve. Okay,
know.
All right.
I'm incorrigible, what can I say?
Yeah, right. All right, I'll pick it up here. Peter Kalm, K-A-L-M, a Scandinavian scientist who visited La Vérendrye in French Canada many years later, reported another curiosity the explorer had discovered. La Vérendrye related that while crossing the northern plains en route to the Mandan Indian villages near central North Dakota, he found a pillar of stone in which was fixed a small stone inscribed on both sides with unknown characters. They were probably Paleo-Hebrew. Unable to decipher the inscription, he took the stone to Quebec in 1743. That's a long trip. You know, you're halfway, three-quarters of the way across the continent. And submitted the inscribed stone to the scrutiny of the Jesuit scholars there. Also unable to read the inscription, they suggested it might be Tatarian, as it resembled illustrations in their books. The mysterious Vérendrye stone was next sent to Paris to one of the king's ministers, the Count de Maurepas, but unfortunately disappeared and despite searches has never been located since. That's what happens.
Okay, can you... repost the link to this article because Leroy needs one. Can you redo that in the chat room?
Yeah, I did. I already posted it twice.
Well, the link, it says the link is not working. So.
Yeah, well, I sent it to you, and you just opened it up, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll try. Go ahead and pick up the next paragraph here, and I'll see
All
if I
right.
can... All
right. Reports of white Mandan gained further support in 1832 when George Catlin, a Pennsylvania artist, journeyed westward to record the life of the Indian in paintings. realizing that Native American cultures were undergoing significant change and even facing extermination, Catlin wanted to depict their life and customs for posterity. He spent several weeks in 1832 among the Mandan and concluded that they were unique among Indian peoples. Mm-hmm. The Mandans, wrote Catlin, are certainly a very interesting and pleasing people in their personal appearance and manners, differing in many respects, both in looks and customs, from all other tribes which I have seen. Several unique characteristics impressed him. While they were not a warlike nation and almost never fought an offensive war, when invaded, they showed their value, their valor and courage to be equal to that of any people on earth.
Sounds like Israelites.
Small in population and surrounded by the more warlike and numerous Sioux, they have very judiciously located themselves in a permanent village, which is strongly fortified and ensures their preservation. Because of their system, Catlin continued, the Mandan have advanced further in the arts of manufacture, have supplied their lodges more abundantly with the comforts and even luxuries of life than any Indian nation I know of. Hmm. And as a consequence, this tribe have taken many steps ahead of other tribes in manners and refinements.
Yeah. Because they're civilized Israelites.
And so forcibly have I been struck with the peculiar ease and elegance of these people, together with the diversity of complexions, the various colors of their hair.
Unlike the Indians.
The singularity of their language and their peculiar and unaccountable customs, that I am fully convinced that they have sprung from some other origin than that of the other North American tribes, or that they are an amalgam of natives with some civilized race.
There you go. Very good. Okay, so these testimonies of white Indians are not to be disregarded, folks. Let me take the rest. I found a link that I think takes people directly to the website.
Yeah, Leroy says it works.
Okay, good.
It works.
Good.
He's there. That's good.
All right. So I'm at the bottom of page 248. The Mandan had a unique boat, today known as the Bull Boat, which Catlin found altogether different from those of all other tribes, and exactly like the Welsh coracle. How about that? Coracle, C-O-R-A-C-L-E. So, okay, if their origin is Welsh, that means they're Cymru. They're of the 10 northern tribes, because the word Cymru or Cimmerian in the English
comes from Cymri.
Cymri, which is Cymru, King Amri. King Amri of the 10 northern tribes. That's what the word Cimmerian, or Cimmerian, it's pronounced that way too.
Right.
Well, that's what it means. And the Welsh have the ancient name for themselves is Cymru. Okay?
There you go.
They come. They're Israelites from the 10 northern tribes. There's no doubt about it. And you might be right that the Mandan are primarily Danites of the Cymru. All right? Continuing. Also, the Mandan had the extraordinary art of manufacturing a very beautiful and lasting kind of blue glass beads, an art, he said, must have been introduced amongst them by some civilized people, because the other Indians didn't do that. Their teachers could not have been recent visitors either, because Lewis and Clark had noticed these glass beads 33 years ago, at a time when no traders or other white people had been amongst the Mandan. Okay, so the Mandan are originally white, no doubt about it. Blonde hair, light complexions, blue eyes, fortified villages, and superior manufacturing were not the only evidence Catlin found for the non-Indian origins of the Mandan. Now, this is in the state of South Dakota, newsletter or magazine. Their religious beliefs and ceremonies, he reported, included a legend about a flood and a big canoe. Noah's canoe. And a story about a dove bringing willow leaves to it. During the Mandan Okipa ceremony, commemorating this flood, a man painted white walked into the village from the west to teach the people. So supposedly painted white. And at the center of every Mandan village stood a symbolic big canoe. It would seem, Catlin wrote, from their tradition of the willow branch, the dove, that these people must have had some proximity to some part of the civilized world. Why don't you take over here, Pastor Steve?
Like the sons of Noah.
Right, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Tragedy struck the Mandan shortly after Catlin's visit. In 1837, the most devastating of a series of smallpox epidemics struck the Upper Missouri tribes. Hearing about the epidemic in 1838 while in New York, Catlin wrote a brief account of it, relating that only 30 or 40 survived.
Wow.
He concluded, "So have perished the friendly and hospitable Mandans, and although it may be that some few individuals may yet be remaining, as a nation, the Mandans are extinct."
Wow, what a wonderful
Further study
record.
Of the people and their curious customs, the artist implied, was no longer
wow.
possible.
Yeah. Okay, let's alternate paragraphs here then. How could these unusual people be explained? Catlin was convinced that these white Indians must be descendants of Europeans who had journeyed to this region in ancient times. Unable for some reason to return to their homeland, they had mixed with the native population, producing the Mandan tribe. Catlin compiled a brief list of word comparisons and found similarities between the Welsh and the Mandan languages. Now, of course, if they're indeed Welsh, and Welsh
is
Hebrew.
That's almost verbatim Hebrew.
Right. So there's some conglomeration of Israelite tribes of the 10 northern tribes. That's what they are, no doubt about it, okay? And it could be Dan predominated here. He speculated that the tribal name Mandan might be a corruption or abbreviation of Madawigas, the name applied by the Welsh to the followers of Madawak or Madoc. He concluded that they were descendants of the Welsh led by Madoc to America, a theory followed by many writers, including the South Dakotan Charles Deland, who authored a lengthy study of the Mandan people in Volume 4 of the South Dakota Historical Collections. Now, it's really, you know, how in the world would they get that far? I mean, South Dakota is really up there. What is this? 1,500 miles or more from the Atlantic Ocean, right, smack dab, virtually in the middle of the continent. Okay, that's a long haul, but for whatever reason they made it. Okay, so in South Dakota Historical Collections, according to historian Bernard DeVoto, the Madoc story became our most elaborate historical myth and exercised a direct influence on our history. The story of Madoc even reached school textbooks. Samuel Eliot Morrison recalled that the Madoc story was in my first history textbook about 1895, and I well remember teacher saying with a smile, "Oh yes, the Mandan Indians still speak kind of Welsh." Now, do you think that story is still in the textbooks, Pastor Steve, of South Dakota?
No, I
yeah, right?
I don't.
Yeah, there'd be good reason for them to delete that. Back to you.
Proponents of Welsh origins for the Mandan trace their claim to AD 1170, when, according to legend, Prince Madoc of Wales sailed westward, found a new land, returned home to get settlers, and then departed with several boatloads of people never to be seen again. The story of Prince Madoc is not as commonly known today as it was earlier in American history.
Oh, because Columbus, right? Columbus was first, right?
When it circulated widely enough so that many explorers searched for survivors of Madoc's colonists among Indian tribes along the Atlantic coast. So prevalent was the notion of Welsh Indians on the frontier that when reports of light-complexioned Mandan Indians with peculiar customs circulated, in the late 18th century, an explorer from Wales, John Evans, journeyed to the Northern Plains to see if the Mandan were really Welsh-speaking. He traveled in 1793 to St. Louis, where the Spanish, suspicious of his motives, jailed him for perhaps 2 years.
Oh, jeez.
Then, thanks to the intercession of friends, Evans was released from Roger Twain's James Mackey's expedition in 1795. Sponsored by the Spanish, this expedition was supposed to follow the Missouri River through the Rocky Mountains and reach the Pacific Ocean. The expedition made it only as far as the Mandan villages in present-day North Dakota. But Evans was able to spend time with the tribe in 1796. Unfortunately for advocates of the theory of Welsh origins, he reported that the Mandan definitely did not speak Welsh. In respect of the Welsh Indians, he wrote, I have only to inform you that I could not meet with such people, and from the intercourse I have had with Indians from latitude 35 to 49, I think you may with safety inform our friends that they have no existence.
Okay, so maybe he didn't run into the correct tribe, and...
Or maybe he wrote that because he was told to write that.
Right, exactly. Evans' conclusions discredited the theory of Welsh origins for the Mandan. However, in modern accounts by advocates of the Welsh theory, such as Zella Armstrong, Who Discovered America, The Amazing Story of Madoc, and Richard Deacon's Madoc and the Discovery of America, it is Evans who was discredited. These authors claim that Evans deliberately lied, as you just suggested, Pastor Steve. Man, you're sharp. Had he reported the Mandan to be Welsh-speaking, the Louisiana region could conclusively or conceivably have been claimed by the English as they would have had prior claim by discovery. Of course, Evans
Who sponsored that expedition?
The French?
The Spanish.
Right. So, it's just like Josephus had to choose his words carefully, right? Mm-hmm. And not criticize Caesar and say, well, Jesus was just a man, not Messiah, right? Thus, concluded Armstrong and Deacon, the Spanish bribed Evans to report that the Mandan Indians were not... Hey, folks! Fake news! In 1796, we had fake news already.
Pastor Steve strikes again.
Yeah, right. In fact, Deacon implied that the reason Evans got along well with the Mandan while visiting them was because of some affinity between them and Evans, suggesting that the Mandan were indeed Welsh. Well, I get along with these people really well, but I don't know who they are. As far as I know, they don't speak Welsh. Back to you. Man, history is so full of bunk.
Boy, they stack it higher and higher, buddy. Let me get a drink of coffee here. Just a second.
Who was the historian who said history is bunk?
I enjoy these sessions so much. I mean, we just uncover.
Well, this is amazing that it's in an official history book of the state of South Dakota.
Amazing. Oh, they'll pull it now.
Yeah, right, now that we've publicized it, right?
In addition to claiming that the Mandan might have spoken Welsh, despite Evans' report to the contrary, Deacon and Armstrong elaborated the history of Madoc's Welsh settlers. They suggested that Madoc originally landed at Mobile Bay, not far from which they claimed the remains of a European-style fortification still exist.
Now, Mobile Bay, is that in Mobile, Alabama?
I don't know.
I wish they would be more specific. Well, back to you.
Well, it moves around because it's Mobile.
Yeah, right. Right.
Okay.
Slap, slap, slap. Two demerits.
Now I've lost it. Perhaps under pressure from surrounding peoples or attempting to return home, these Welsh pioneers moved northward and became the famous mound builders of the Ohio Valley.
Okay, the mound builders. The American Indians, or the Amerindians, weren't known for doing that. They lived in tents. Right?
Well, that was a fortification. I lived in Cleves, Ohio, where the Great Mound is.
Mm-hmm.
Got a big park right there about the Great Mound, and right north of that is the Great Mound up along the Miami River, and they were big fortifications.
Right, yeah. Not Amerindian-style fortifications, but European-style. Back to you.
That's correct. A great battle occurred there between the Welsh and their neighbors, according to the authors, and the Welsh were driven westward up the Missouri, where they intermingled with Indian peoples and eventually became the historic Mandan.
Okay. All right. Such theories are not without competition. Among those who have challenged the theory of the Welsh Mandan is Hjalmar Holland, who noted that the Welsh are generally brown-eyed and could hardly be considered ancestral to the blue-eyed Mandan. Well, we suggested that, you know, it might have been, you know, an assortment of different Israelite tribes. Okay. The descendants of Madoc Welsh must have settled elsewhere, Holland concluded. In his opinion, the Mandan's origins must be traced instead to the Vikings. Holland authored numerous books on Viking voyages to America and became the foremost advocate of the authenticity of the Kensington Stone discovered in Minnesota in 1895. Hold on a second. I am interested in the footnote here. Holland's books on this subject include The Kensington Stone, Westward from Vinland, An Account of Norse Discoveries and Explorations in America, etc., reprinted. So, the explorers in the early days leading up to 1900 and possibly in the mid-20th century reported this. And we know that even the Smithsonian Institute was covering up reports like this and covering up reports of Egyptian-style artifacts in the Grand Canyon and bones of giants, etc., 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 okay? All right, where was I? I had to look at the footnote. I lost my place. If you know where I left off, pick it up, Steve.
All right. Chiseled into the stone were some unusual markings, which were quickly discovered to be runic characters telling of a Viking journey into the Minnesota region.
Wow.
Holland translated the message on the stone, which today stands in a museum in Alexandria, Minnesota, as follows. We are 8 Goths, that's Swedes,
right,
and 22 Norwegians on an exploration journey from Vinland through or across the West, i.e. roundabout the West. We had camp by a lake with 2 skerries, 1 day's journey north from this stone. We were out and fished one day. After we came home, we found 10 of our men red with blood and dead. Ave Maria, save us from evil. Ave Maria.
Yeah, Ave Maria.
We have 10 of our party by the sea to look after our ships or ship 14 days journey from this island in the year of our Lord 1362.
Wow, what a piece of
evidence. Scholars attacked the authenticity of the Kensington inscription, but Holland continued throughout his life to write vigorous replies to to all criticism.
Good
they can't
for
have
holy.
That. They yeah. can't have that truth out.
That's right. That's right. But that must be covered up. Okay. Holland's research indicated that a Viking missionary effort had been sent from Scandinavia in search and support of earlier emigrants who had settled in Greenland and Vinland. Finding no settlers in those places, the search party journeyed westward and through a complicated river journey via Hudson's Bay arrived in Minnesota. Reduced in numbers and unable to return home, the survivors united with a small tribe of Indians to the east of their landing site, and later generations of these Viking Indians migrated to the Missouri River region. This interpretation explained, according to Holland, the Mandan religious ceremony described by Catlin in which the white man entered the village from the west as a teacher. Holland discovered remarkable similarities between Mandan earth lodges and medieval Scandinavian houses. The Mandan legend of a big canoe, he concluded, referred to the Viking boats and sea journey. I guess not necessarily to Noah's Ark, but could be because they had the, you know, the what do you call it, the dove. Mm-hmm. And other elements of the Noah story. And the missing Virendri stone was, like the Kensington stone, runic. And, you know, we've done shows about, you know, Paleo-Hebrew and the Viking runes, mm-hmm. with the Viking runes being based on Paleo-Hebrew. Okay?
Correct.
Yeah, that's common knowledge now. In corroboration of the evidence of the Kensington stone and the documented missionary effort, Holland cited Viking axes and swords found in the region and mooring stones located where Viking ships were anchored. So their party, which had stayed behind on the lake's edge, were massacred. And they said, okay, we got to get out of here lest we get massacred. Back to you.
Well, or they could have stayed and massacred them back.
Yeah, they could have. But they had no idea what kind of numbers.
It's a Holocaust.
Yeah, it's a Holocaust, right?
Uh-oh. Never mind.
A Viking Holocaust.
After Holland presented his evidence, Zella Armstrong, advocate of Welsh origins, attempted to reconcile Catlin's blue-eyed Mandan with dark-eyed Welsh ancestry by suggesting that both Viking and Welsh intermixture with the Mandan took place. Blue-eyed Mandans were descendant of the Viking explorers who had chiseled the Kensington stone, she concluded, and the Welsh language and customs were the legacy of the earlier descendants of Madoc. That could be true.
Okay.
They could have mingled.
Yeah.
You know? Another attempt to reconcile the Welsh and Viking theories appeared in a popular magazine, Real West, in 1966. The author, Gene Jones, cited a recently discovered map at Yale University that predated Columbus's 1492 voyage.
No, it didn't. No, 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 no. Nobody predated Columbus. Don't you know that? Back
yeah,
to you.
Cristoforo Colombo, the right. Jew.
Yeah, right. Columbus-stein.
The Jew. And showed the eastern coast of North America as proof that the Mandan were descendants of the Vikings. It seemed evident to the author that the Vikings had mapped the eastern coast and consequently must have made the journey to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Jones concluded that since the Vikings had earlier conquered Wales, it was obvious that the Vikings en route to the New World had included Welsh members in their crew, and that both Vikings and Welsh had ultimately mixed with the Indians to become the ancestors of the Mandan.
Okay, sounds reasonable. All right.
Curiouser and curious.
Yeah, yeah. However, another writer traced the origins of the mysterious Mandan to the lost tribes of Israel.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. Too far-fetched.
What heresy.
Too far-fetched. Nah, no way.
A heresy, yes.
Many earlier efforts had attempted to link all American Indians to the lost tribes. When America was first discovered, Europeans had been at a loss to explain the origin of the native inhabitants since traditional biblical teaching claimed a recent single origin. Yeah, well, traditional, yeah. King James type of tradition. Adam and Eve for all humanity. Right? So that lie, just that misconception, has been around a long time. A logical deduction seemed that somehow wandering Jews...
The wandering Jews.
Yeah, Israelites. And no, the Jews didn't have any boats. There's no such thing as a Jewish sailor. There just isn't. Or a Jewish carpenter. All right? So,
Jewish farmer.
Jewish farmer, right? So, the wandering Israelites had made it to the New World, and the usual interpretation centered on one or more of the lost tribes whom the Assyrians had taken into captivity in 723 BC. Very good. One popular publication that advocated that Indians were lineal descendants of the lost tribes of Israel was James Adair's History of the American Indians, which appeared in 1775. So, we're all these publications that link various Indian tribes to Europeans, there must be all kinds of literature like this.
You ever hear of it?
Nope. Nope.
Where do you hear of this kind of stuff except on EFR?
Yeah, except on EFR, folks. Okay. This has all been suppressed. Okay. He endeavored to prove this connection from their religious rites, civil and martial. I think it might, martial customs, their marriages, funeral ceremonies, manners, language, traditions, and a variety of particulars. His conclusion was supported by none other than George Catlin, who believed, with many others, that the North American Indians are a mixed people, that they have Israelite blood, not Jewish blood, in their veins. Pastor Steve, first time I went to the Wisconsin Dells,
That's something up there, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's a wonderful
place. All those lakes, I mean,
and the rivers, it's a tourist mecca, Wisconsin Dells.
Yeah, cheese making.
Stop making me drool.
All the architecture up there, the European style buildings. Wow. Yeah.
Hot dogs with cheese and sauerkraut.
Right. Oh, shut up!
Right.
You see how mean Eli is to me, folks. Right, he does this to me. Food torture all the time.
So they have a variety of Indian ceremonies, you know, various different Indian tribes with the feathers and the, you know, what do you call it, the suede outfits and the beads and moccasins and everything. And they dance around, hoot and holler. And then, you know, they're going, hey, this sounds
it's like the Cherokee, total, absolute movie Indian stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Cherokee never did that.
Oh, okay.
They dress up like Western Indians with the big headdresses and all that other stuff.
It's all Hollywood, huh?
Yeah, and half of them aren't even Indians; they're Mexicans.
Right. Okay.
Just ask Brother Rob about that. Yeah. They're loaded with Mexicans down there in Cherokee.
Oh, yeah. Right. Right. Okay. Back to you.
It is hardly surprising then that a more recent publication has followed this lead and attempted to prove that the Mandan in particular were descendants of the lost tribes. Henrietta Mertz's The Naphtali, One Lost Tribe, that means Naphtali.
Wow, I've never heard of that book. Man.
Published in 1957, stated, amazingly enough, the ceremony of the Mandan up to 1837 followed more perfectly the original Old Testament record than does that of our present day
and Hollywood.
Her examination focused on Caitlin's description of the Okipa ceremony, which she was convinced paralleled the ritual of the Hebrews.
Wow. Wow.
In the annual religious ceremony of the Mandan, she wrote, a rededication took place, fulfilling to the utmost the sacred vow given by Moshe. so incredibly faithful to biblical description that it defies belief.
Wow.
Mertz claimed other similarities. For example, she suggested that the court of the dwelling described in the book of Exodus resembles a drawing of a Mandan ceremonial lodge. In her opinion, the Mandan flood story, clothing, bundle rites, and language all indicate Hebrew origins. Mertz also considered it more than coincidence that one of these subgroups of the Mandan was called the Nuptadi, a word bearing close resemblance to Nephtali. It should be Naphtali.
Right.
One of the 10 lost tribes of Israel.
Wow. Well, what do you think scholars thought of, other, you know, the mainstream scholars thought of all this stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. We better not, man, we're the chosen people. We can't have them as the...
Right. Well, of course, Mertz is ridiculed.
We got to send them smallpox.
Yeah. And by the way,
Kill the goyim.
Yeah. It's important to realize, too, that all of these myths that the white people were so evil toward the Indians, more Indians died of diseases that we brought with us than by physical violence, you know. So this was Yahweh's doing, not ours. You know, we didn't intentionally infect all these Indians. Although the rumors I've heard was that the guy who sold blankets to the, what was that Eastern tribe? The cholera-soaked blankets was actually a Jew. That's what I heard. But let's continue. Scholars reject all these theories. Which scholars? Mainstream Judeo scholars, both old and new, of Mandan origins, and conclude that there was nothing mysterious about this tribe of Indians. Most academic studies concerned with the tribe, therefore, ignore the ever-popular speculation about Mandan origins. You know, who cares what the local people think?
Pay
can't
no
be true.
Attention to that man behind the curtain.
Yeah, right? Okay. Causing it to appear that the authors are unaware of the proponent's evidence. Such lack of attention, however, is due to the fact that scholars can easily discredit the explanations and evidence in support of non-Indian origins for the Mandan because the advocates of poor methodology and misuse of sources. Yeah, that's talking about the mainstream scholars. Poor methodology and misuse of sources. Yeah, destroying evidence, destroying archaeological evidence, folks. We know that this goes on. Nevertheless, popular speculation about the white Mandan persists, and an examination of the reasons for its rejection by scholars is warranted, to say the least. Back to you.
Yes, and they erased all the emails that,
right?
That they gave back and forth.
Yeah.
One consists... I'm sorry. One consistent problem in the published arguments of proponents of non-Indian origins for the Mandan is the selectiveness of their evidence. Advocates use only those sources that support their thesis, ignoring significant documents that do not agree with their claims.
Mm-hmm.
They employ the journals of Lavendrea and Catlin almost exclusively. John Evans, the Welshman who attacked the Welsh origins hypothesis, is also discussed in these accounts, for his opponents dare not omit his directly conflicting testimony.
Yeah, sure.
But his conclusions are always discredited.
Yeah, he's the one working for the Spanish. So he had to.
However, many additional travelers visited the Mandan during the early historic period and either did not mention white Indians or, as Evans did, advocated Indian origins for the Mandan. Indeed, even another visitor of Welsh background, David Thompson, was at the Mandan villages in 1797.
Okay, very, very late 18th century. Thompson, an important figure in the exploration of Canada, made no mention in his journal of white Indians or unusual customs, despite the fact that his time had been spent in noticing their manners and conversing about their policy, wars, country traditions, etc. In the evenings, I attended their amusements of dancing, singing, etc., which were always conducted with the highest order and decorum. After their idea of thinking, among other Canadian traders who visited the Mandan and recorded their experiences without mentioning anything unusual were John MacDonald, Francois Antoine Laroque, and Charles Mackenzie. Most importantly, in 1804 to 1805, Meriwether Lewis and William Clark wintered with the Mandan and observed their life and culture on a daily basis, mentioning nothing unusual in their journals. However, Pocahontas was so beautiful, I forget which one married her. Charles DeLand, an advocate...
Pocahontas was married to an Indian and didn't marry either one of them.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, they brought one of them back to Washington, as I recall.
Yes.
So, okay. In any case... Charles DeLand, an advocate of Welsh theory, openly expressed his disappointment with these two highly respected explorers, complaining that they did not use their golden opportunity to observe the white Mandan while residing with them. It evidently did not occur to DeLand that Lewis and Clark found nothing to report in that respect. It also could be that it was Lewis and Clark that was a very treacherous expedition for them. And, they may have forgotten, and they may not have run into the same, Mandan encampment. Might have been other people. But back to you.
Well, they had all kinds of problems.
Oh, yeah.
If you read their journals, they had disaster after disaster. It was not an easy...
Yeah, it was a very difficult
expedition. Very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Lewis and Clark's failure to observe that the Mandan were Welsh or white was not due to any unfamiliarity on their part with the Madoc story. In fact, when they met the Flathead in the Rocky Mountains, the explorers were surprised at the tribe's unique language.
Okay.
And Lewis began compiling a vocabulary.
Very interesting.
Bernard DeVoto comment, for that moment, the expedition was on the rainbow edge of Canada. This language might be Welsh, and these people light-complected more so than common, for Indians might be the descendants of Prince Madoc.
Very good.
Okay. Lewis and Clark quickly abandoned the fantasy, but the fact that they even considered the Flathead as the Welsh descendants after having lived near the Mandan for many months makes the absence in their notes of anything unique about the Mandan even more conclusive.
Conclusive of what? That they were white?
They were politically correct.
Okay. There you go. The Mandan villages received many other important visitors after Lewis and Clark. Didn't one guy report that they were virtually wiped out and there were only 30 or 40 of them left?
Mm-hmm.
In the late, very late 18th century there. Henry Breckinridge, who traveled up the Missouri River in 1811, was familiar with the theory of non-Indian origins and commented on the ruins of previous villages along the river, noting, quote, many, without considering the astonishing number and variety of these remains, have attributed them to a colony of Welsh or Danes who are supposed to have found their way by some accident to this country about the 9th century, Breckinridge concluded. It is absolutely impossible that they could have gained such a footing as these vestiges indicate, without at the same time leaving others less equivocal. He found no unequivocal evidence of non-Indian origins, leading him to state that no Welsh nation exists at present on this continent is beyond a doubt. Okay, so that's Breckinridge's opinion. Back to you.
Well, Breckinridge...
This will be the last one. Yeah.
Breckinridge, aware that perceived similarities in European Mandan customs and material culture had led other travelers to opposite conclusions, was of the opinion that the Mandan had derived their culture independently.
Huh, European customs derived independently. That's curious.
Well,
how did that happen?
Just funny how that just
happened.
In tracing the origin of the institutions or inventions among men, we are apt to forget that nations, however diversified by manners and languages, are yet of the same species.
That's his logic? That's his logic? Oh, okay.
And that the same institutions may originate amongst 20 different people.
That's ridiculous. Back to you.
The customs and culture that he observed, which others had cited as proof of non-Indian origins, convinced Brackenridge only that the American tribes belong to the human
race. Oh, my goodness. Right. Okay.
Can you say Judeo-Christian? In fact, he suggested the real surprise would be if they should not show a resemblance.
Well, there's no resemblance to European culture among other Indians. Right? There isn't.
Nope.
Except the ones who actually, well, actually the Cherokee actually claim to be descended from the tribe of Judah. They actually make that claim. All right? So you would expect some of their customs to be similar. In fact, Barry Fell, somebody mentioned Barry Fell in the chat room. He wrote a book, America BC. Yeah, thank you, Kim Smith. And, outside of that book by Barry Fell, there's very little about white Indians. Barry Fell reported that they spoke Celtic. What's the other language besides Welsh? What was the common... I'm trying to think of the other... it's a Celtic language, coming from Britain. And that was also spoken in addition to Welsh, according to Barry Fell. Okay? So the evidence is there. It's a question of who wants to suppress it and why. So, yes, and this is a really wonderful find. It's very rare to find something like this on the internet or anywhere, because who has been suppressing the migrations of the 12 tribes into America, despite all of the evidence of thousands upon thousands of Paleo-Hebrew inscriptions all over the East Coast, Tennessee, Kentucky, Illinois, Michigan, New Mexico, and now we find out South Dakota, North Dakota, and Idaho, folks. All right. Okay, Davidson Roberts says, I am a native North Dakotan. Very good. You're probably a man, Dan.
He's got Sacagawea in there.
Maybe I had the Sacagawea, right. Maybe I said Pocahontas. Sacagawea. I had the wrong fair maiden of Indian or possibly Welsh extraction. Okay, folks, very interesting travelogue here up the rivers of Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, etc. Thanks for listening. We're just about out of time.
I was really getting into it.
We're out of time, folks. So thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. We'll find another similar subject. We're tracing the migrations of the 12 tribes. So thanks for listening. Take care, and Yahweh bless.
Praise Yahweh. Tribe
of Judas, yeah, right. Okay. All right, folks. Thanks. Take care. Yahweh bless. Bye-bye.
Boy, that was something else.
That was fun.